T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the John Chuckery Show. Coming to you again from Parts Unknown tonight. Hanging out with you for the full four here till 11 o'clock. Don't forget to download the Radio.com app. That way you can always catch us on the go. We're on social media. The station's at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can follow me on social media. It is at JMCH316, at JMCH316. He is at JarvisD90 producing the show. Jarvis is going to put up on the website or on our Twitter or whatever it is, one of the platforms is going to put up our list of our best NFL team of all time. And we'll talk a little bit about that again a little bit later on in the show. If I didn't say as well, 404-741-0929. That's the phone. That's the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of everything here. So obviously, as you know, collegiate athletics is in a funky time, having lost out on the NCAA basketball tournament, lost out on all of their spring sports, and the decision about what's going to happen with football still looming and still trying to be decided as to what we're going to see. Now, if for some reason that football does not take place, and I still can't buy into Kirk Herbstreit's theory, because the amount of money that football generates for collegiate athletic programs would be crippling to if you go back to back with no basketball and no football, that's crippling. I mean, for a lot of programs, there are a lot of programs that probably would have a hard time bouncing back from that. So one of the things that is being discussed is the idea of cutting back the minimum of sports to be considered in Division I. Okay? So if you're not familiar with this, to be a Division I school, you have to sponsor 14 total sports, at least 7 sports for men and 7 sports for women. Or 6 for men and 8 for women. Now, obviously, the reason it can't be 8 men and 6 women is that you have to be able to have the Title IX requirements, which means that if there's a sport that you can offer to men that can be offered to women, you have to offer it to both. Okay? Football is the one exception to all of that. So if you offer track and field for men, you have to offer it for women. If you offer golf for men, you have to offer it to women. Okay. Now, one of the things that a lot of schools have done, though, is eliminate certain sports. And for instance, two of the sports that really have gotten eliminated over the last handful of years, and really because of Title IX, has been wrestling, has been golf, has been tennis. There's a lot of schools that have gotten rid of those particular sports for multiple reasons. I mean, one is they're not revenue generating sports. So there's not a lot of money that is had. You get a lot of expense because you have teams that travel over the United States to compete in different things, but there's not revenue that's being generated for it. And the Title IX aspect of it, if you have tennis or golf for men, you have to offer it for women as well. So because of that, you don't just have one sport, you know, or one group of athletes. You have to have two groups of athletes and scholarships and everything else that goes along with that. So right, wrong, indifferent, fair or unfair, what have you, that's the reality of collegiate athletics. But it is seriously being debated that one of the sidetracks of what this coronavirus fiasco could have and the long-term effect on collegiate athletics is that the requirement for number of sports that Division I has, and it varies by division, you know, if you're Division I, Division II, NAIA, and things like that, because obviously it takes a lot of money to be able to support fourteen different sports. Now, that's the minimum requirement, by the way, okay? Obviously, a lot of programs offer a lot more than that, but as a minimum requirement, it's 14. But there's talk about bringing that minimum down to even 10. Now, think about that. Football and basketball certainly won't go away. So you're talking about football, men's basketball, women's basketball. That won't go away. I would seriously doubt that baseball and women's softball would go away. So there's five. So what becomes the other five sports that you have that you offer as a minimum? And what gets cut even more? You know, is that, I can't imagine track and field getting cut. That would be hard for me to imagine track and field. So you're talking about now seven. Doesn't leave a whole lot of room for a minimum for if you're a university that is cash strapped and trying to figure out what to do. You know, when you talk about these ancillary sports, lacrosse, water polo, you know, swimming and diving, we said tennis, golf, wrestling. You know, there's a lot of ancillary sports that could very much go by the wayside, which certainly means a lot less scholarship opportunity for students to be able to go to school and be a part of the collegiate environment. And it would be a shame, but the financial reality is that I think most programs and most schools, as we discussed, I think they can absorb the basketball loss of revenue. I don't know how many of them can absorb the loss of football revenue. You know, even when you're talking about a school like Vanderbilt, okay, which you don't necessarily think of as, you know, a big athletic prowess university, but, you know, they're a sometimes bowl-eligible football team. They've been, multiple times pretty good NCAA basketball team at times. They've certainly been an elite baseball team at times. But, I mean, certainly don't think of them the same breath as athletically as Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Auburn, you know, and other schools around the nation, Ohio State, Michigan, Florida State. I mean, take your pick of what you want to do. But when you talk about the amount of money that football and the SEC network and everything brings in, when you're talking about $43, $44, $45 million into an athletic program, you know, even if that money is cut in half, for a school like Vanderbilt or for Missouri, those are huge hits. Those are enormous hits to try to survive through. And maybe the only way that there is a pathway is to change up the rules. And by the way, this is going through, I believe it's the NCAA Division I Sports Council, which I think that there are all 32 conferences are represented in all of this, because the real voting that's going to take place, and some people were talking about it could even happen today, but the real vote thing that they're looking at is talking about giving the extra year of eligibility to all athletes that are involved in spring sports, also voting potentially on giving a extra year of eligibility to winter sports teams that qualified for postseason. So if you were qualified for the NCAA basketball tournament for the men, the women's NCAA tournament, or whatever it is, I'm trying to think of what the other winter sports are. I don't know if gymnastics is a fall or winter sport, but it'd be something like that. If you qualified for the postseason in your particular sport as a wintertime sport, then potentially you could get an extra year of eligibility. And there's a lot to work out there. I think the spring sports, it's fairly easy, other than seniors. Seniors has a little bit of work that they have to try to figure out with it when you talk about Okay, do they have to enroll back in school, be in graduate school or whatever if they graduate? There are some things that have to be figured out and worked out for all of that. But there are ways that they could get around some things and figure it out if you're just talking about for a one-year deal, you know, giving kids the opportunity to make a one-year comeback. But this idea, though, that the minimum number of sports, you know, think about how many kids across the country would be affected by that. You know, there's 130 Division I football schools, and I don't remember how many total Division I programs, athletic programs that there are, but you're talking about a significant amount of kids that would not have the ability to be able to get a scholarship for whatever it is. If you're a golfer, if you're a swimmer, if you're, who knows, maybe gymnastics. I mean, there's a lot of different things that you could look at. Because like we said, we know that football, basketball, women's basketball, I think track and field is safe as well. I think baseball, softball. There aren't many sports left that you need to have to keep that minimum requirement if it does go down to 10. Now, this has not been voted on officially or anything like that, but there is a lot of talk about, and there was a guy, by the way, that was on from a Business Sports Journal that was on Feinbaum's show earlier today talking about this. I think his name is Michael Smith. And I think we've actually talked to Michael before on one of my shows a long time ago, right, for the Sports Business Journal, I think is what the title of the publication is. But was on Feinbaum's show today talking about that this is seriously being considered about getting rid of, or I should say lowering the minimum requirement of Division I schools. And you know how these kinds of things work, too. It's easy to say, well, it's just a temporary thing or this, that, and the other. But a lot of times these things just don't go back. They just don't go back to the way they were, or it's just like a one-year reprieve. When you're talking about the amount of millions and millions and millions of dollars that gets lost, those schools can't recoup that in a year or so. So if something like this does get enacted, then that's probably going to be tough to ever overturn again. And it may sound like a lot, 10 sports, but it's not a lot. And I'm sure a lot of schools will certainly not try to cut back some, but if you can get the minimum down lower, if you're, as we said before, if you're Seton Hall or Creighton or something like that, and you rely so much more on your basketball money because you don't have football, then the reality of cutting back to like 10 sports or something to meet the minimum, then that probably is realistic. I would doubt that Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, I don't know that this affects some of those top tier blue blood types of schools, but you get into some of the, Vanderbilts, of the world, I don't know, give me some Division I schools. Oregon State, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't affect the Power 5 too much unless you're, like, really one of the low-end Power 5 teams. You would like to hope that it doesn't affect some of the Power 5 teams because the amount of money that still comes in to those. But certainly if you're Boise State and you don't have football revenue, where does any of your other revenue come from collegiate athletics? Where does any other revenue come? I don't know if they even have or what their basketball program is. I can't imagine that they're outside of football, that any program that they have is any sort of moneymaker whatsoever. So this could be a very big deal and kind of one of the stories to watch now, before this gets onto page one. Keep this little nugget about this story and how it develops over the next several months, depending on what happens with football. If we don't have football and there's a big loss of revenue, this could be a very, very big reality for collegiate athletics moving forward. Okay, when we get back, Josh Alper from Pro Football Talk is going to join us as we will talk some NFL draft with him and get his thoughts as I think it's 3 weeks from Thursday that we will have the NFL draft upcoming. We'll talk to him next. John Chukwu here hanging out with you on a Monday night. Sports Radio 929 The Game and on the radio.com. Sports Radio 929 The Game. Welcome back to the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out with you here on a Monday night. 404-741-0929 is the phone line. That's also our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Follow us on our social media at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. By the way, Jarvis tweeted out our each one of our all-time NFL teams, so you can leave us a comment about all of that. Follow me on social media at JMCH316. He is at JarvisD90, and we go out to the WaitFor.com hotline. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh Alper, A-L-P-E-R. He is a writer for ProFootballTalk.com. Covering the NFL, of course, as we get ready for, I think it's 3 weeks from Thursday, we will have the NFL draft. Josh Alper joining us this evening. Josh, thanks so much for being a part of the show and being on tonight.
My pleasure.
Let's start locally here with the Atlanta Falcons, and lots of rumor and innuendo, as we like to say, about what the Falcons are going to do. It feels like, whether it's up or back, they're going to make some type of move to get themselves in a different position from where they are in the first round, at least at 16. What is kind of your gut or some of the things that you're hearing telling you about what direction the Falcons may go with the first round pick?
I think that the idea of going up is one that would seem to fit where this team is right now. I think that when you look at where, you know, Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff are in terms of, you know, getting that stay of execution after last season and saying, though, that you would, you know, you expect things to move up this year. You can't expect to keep your jobs if things don't get better. And that's the perfect spot to go and take a swing. And for a team that needs defensive players, it's not a bad position to be in. If you figure there are going to be three quarterbacks that go early and a bunch of offensive tackles that go early, that if you want a pass rusher or a difference maker on the defensive side of the ball, that's going to be there up and to get up there and go up there and get it. So I think that one is more interesting to me simply because of where the team is in terms of their, you know, mentality.
Josh, there's been some potential rumor now that Tua has been cleared to go at it with no limitations to it. Some people are wondering if somebody will be willing to try to go up and get right behind Cincinnati at the number two spot, take the Redskins pick, and go get Tua. Is there any way Washington, you think, is in the business of giving up that number two pick? Or, you know, would they be open if the right deal comes along?
I would be surprised. I would be surprised if they get off of Chase Young. I think that that's a spot where, look, I think there's a certain deal, you know, if you're talking multiple first-round picks and really setting up a team to then turn around and do all sorts of different things, then I think there's a possibility. But if you look in the realm of, like, what a likely offer would look like, I think that they would take the Chase Young and use that as a way to sort of announce the kind of team that they want to be and who they, you know, who they want to build around as Ron Rivera takes over and moves forward. That the Lions, though, seem to me to be a team that could really be open for business right there, because I think they could go down and then move back up to get Jeff Okuda, who's a player I think they would really covet in their secondary and could add something without, you know, running a risk of losing him, especially if they could make that move with the Dolphins at number five.
Josh Alper from Pro Football Talk is joining us here on the WaitFor.com hotline as we look to the NFL draft coming up here. You know, the Giants general manager said that he was open for business. Is that another team that you think stays where they're at, or are they legitimate about the idea of getting out that four spot and trying to accumulate some picks?
Well, Dave Gettleman's been the general manager for the Panthers and the Giants, and I don't know off the top of my head if it's seven or eight drafts. He's never once traded down. So I think that is a very big tell. Now, that doesn't mean it's an impossibility, but I think for a team that desperately needs offensive line help and you're at the fourth pick in the draft, you have your choice of the tackles. And I would imagine that you've done enough homework, even with the challenges that are in place this year in terms of vetting prospects, that you've done enough homework to know if you love one of those tackles. And Dave Gettleman's a guy who always talks about building from the lines, and he loves to talk about the hog mollies and how they move people at that point. And I think that's got to be where you're going with a team that, again, he needs to win. He got to to keep his job when they fired the coach. He needs to, you know, he needs his team to be a winner. He needs to show that his plan can work. And I think for that to happen, you need Daniel Jones to be protected by a big monster left tackle.
Josh, you know, if we assume that Joe Burrow will be the number one pick for Cincinnati, Chase Young is the number two pick for the Washington Redskins, you know, is Tua the next kind of most coveted guy the teams are willing to go up and roll the dice on? Or who are the other players that teams will look at and say, hey, I got to get to three because I don't want to miss out on this guy?
The only player I could see fitting into that that spot other than Tua would be Isaiah Simmons, if there's a team that just sees him as a guy that can do absolutely everything for them on defense and be a game changer. And I think when you're looking at that, though, that's a big price to play for a player who could also wind up being a nice but limited value player because he's a hybrid safety linebacker. Now, I think the upside for Simmons is off the charts. He's an athletic beast and can play in pass coverage, can rush the passer, can hit, can do absolutely everything you're looking for. So I think that there's a chance the team could fall in love with him. If it's not that, though, I don't know who's making that kind of jump for a position other than a quarterback.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is a John Chuckwood Show as we are live on the waitfor.com hotline. We're joined by Josh Alper. He is a writer for ProFootballTalk.com as we take a look at the upcoming NFL draft and get his thoughts. You know, obviously, quarterback is always that position that feels like it gets that run. Once you get past Burrow, once you get past Tua, is Herbert the next best option? And are there teams that, you know, are looking at Jordan Love that are willing to make a big move? I mean, how likely do you think some of these teams are to get up, to get Herbert, Love, take Tua and Burrow out of it, but that next group of quarterbacks?
Yeah, well, I think Herbert is a guy who has seemed to solidify himself as a top 10 pick at the Senior Bowl and the Combine and the work that he did there. And I think that, you know, the Chargers are a team that obviously comes to mind there. I think that Love is probably a first-round pick and maybe winds up in the top 10. I haven't heard that same kind of certainty about him, and he may be a guy who gets hurt a little bit by not being able to go and talk to teams and get to be in that room and break down defenses for the coaches. I don't know if that'll turn out to be the case, but he does seem to be a prospect that there's a little bit more up in the air about, whereas not everybody may be madly in love with Herbert or move heaven and earth to get him, but if they were in a spot to pick him where the Chargers are, I think that they would be very intrigued.
Josh, I mean, how legitimate are some of the complaints that people have had about holding the draft without some of the interviews and stuff? I mean, you've got all the tape, obviously, of what they've done in their collegiate career. You had the Combine. You had the Senior Bowl. There were a few little workouts here and there. I mean, is this just kind of, you know, we need something to complain about and you know, we just want to overthink everything? Or is there some legitimacy to it?
It's more challenging for that. It's more challenging, but look, we're at a very challenging time for our country, and I think that the idea that the NFL is able to conduct business at all is something that I think for a lot of people has been a bit of a relief valve. It's certainly for me to be able to work right now and be busy and be active and deal with everything. I'm not saying it's a positive, but it's been something that takes your mind off of everything else that's going on. And I think that the thought that it's harder, yes, it's harder, but it's, look, there are guys who do well at this and screw it up every single year. And it's not going to be any different this year, I think, at the end of the day. And so you have to alter your strategy and it's a little bit different. And there are just so many questions about everything going on right now, though, that, you know, if you don't do it now, what point is it going to be, okay, now we can do it? Like, there's not going to be a two-month period to take before a season in order to do the draft process. It's unfortunate, but it's the way it is. And so I think everyone will buckle down and get it done.
writer for ProFootballTalk.com, Josh Alper, joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. You know, I joke, Josh, about the fact that you could have Roger Goodell come out in a bubble like John Travolta back in the 70s in that movie and have, you know, the Oompa Loompas hand him a card with a draft pick on it, and people are still going to be completely fascinated and enamored because it's the NFL draft. And, you know, I understand the presentation and the feel-good stories and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're a football fan of a team, you want to know who's coming to your team, who did they get, what kind of moves did they make. What are you hearing as far as how the presentation, you think, of the draft is going to go?
Well, I think, I think there's a real chance that it's Roger Goodell with a camera at his desk at his home, and it is something compelling about that and what it would mean that, you know, that this is where we're all at, and that I think you're going to see cameras in the homes of Joe Burrow and Chase Young and Jeff Okuda and Justin Herbert and Tua and these guys, as long, you know, that it's going to be different, and it's going to be, I think, kind of fascinating to see how it hits you and finding these guys at home. And it's not, there's no artifice, there's no glitz, glamour. It's like, this is hitting you in a completely different way and in a completely different moment, and being able to capture those things on camera, I think it's going to be really interesting. And look, I think it's going to make for a very different viewing experience, and it's there's going to be some things that you miss out on, and certainly Vegas, you feel terrible for them. I'm sure they were putting on a great show. But we'll get back to that. And for this year, this is where we're at. Where we're at. And I think you're right. Everyone wants to think about those things and think about a future of what that means when the Falcons pick a player, what it's going to mean for them down the road. And so all of that's going to play. I think it's going to wind up playing out in a positive way for all involved.
You can follow him on Twitter at Josh Alper. He is a writer for ProFootballTalk.com and joined us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Josh, really appreciate the time tonight, man. Thanks for jumping off for a few minutes in Atlanta and being part of the show.
My pleasure. Be well. Be safe.
You got it. Same to you. Coming up next, what's bugging Chuckery? I mean, the NFL and the NFLPA wouldn't do anything kind of underhanded or shady, would they? We'll discuss that next. Chuck Reed hanging out with you on a Monday night. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and on the Radio.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Welcome back on the John Chuck Reed Show, hanging out with you on a Monday night. 404-741-0929. That is the phone line. That is also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Don't forget, you got to download that Radio.com app. That way you can keep up with us on the go, anything that's going on out there or when you're not in the car. Also, too, hey, Atlanta United supporters, we are going to replay Atlanta United radio broadcast from big matches in 2018 in our Road to the MLS Cup broadcast over the next 3 weekends. Tune in this Saturday at 5 o'clock for Atlanta United at LA Galaxy from April of 2018. And tune in this Sunday at 5 p.m. for Atlanta United Atlanta United at Orlando City. So we're playing all of that as part of our Road to the MLS Cup. Don't forget, follow us on social media. Station's at 929 The Game. You want to jump on our Twitter page because Jarvis put up our list of our best NFL teams of all time, where basically we went position by position and picked the best guys. So it is kind of funny. You can... One thing you notice immediately about it is the age difference between Jarvis and I as to who saw who. I remember Mean Joe Green and watching Mean Joe Green as a kid. So it's just kind of funny. Sometimes you get that perspective out there. So take a look at that. Leave us a comment on Twitter for all of that. We will talk about that a little bit later on tonight in the show. Or leave us a comment on the text line, Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, as well for all of it. So... And we'll have a busy week on the show, so we got a lot of things going on as we will lead you into WrestleMania coming up. So we got some guests that will tie into that, including on Wednesday. Looks like we're all set up for one of the main event guys that will be wrestling for the World Heavyweight title at WrestleMania. And by the way, it's already all filmed and everything, so it's going to be weird talking to a guy who already knows what the results are of his match because it's already been taped, but none of us know what the result is. Although if you're, I don't know, like for a better term, a smart mark, you kind of know and understand what was probably going to happen. You can kind of put all of that. By the way, I'm helping my buddy Christian out, Jarvis, because he is betting money on – he's going to I guess it's FanDuel, and you can do WrestleMania. You pick you get like $100, and every wrestler is worth a dollar amount, like a fantasy. So I think Seth Rollins is worth like $23 or whatever the numbers are. But you got like $100 to put together X amount of wrestlers, and then you can also do like some side bet stuff that goes along with it. So I'm helping him out to put together, because I think first place gets $500 on a FanDuel if you win it. So, and of course, unfortunately for Christian, he's a buddy of mine, good friend of mine, who's a bartender, and unfortunately not working a whole lot, not working at all right now. I think it's 13, 14 days that he's been off. Speaking of always being off, let's get to something we call What's Bugging Chuckery.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Bugging Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Now, I'm not trying to be conspiracy theorist or anything like that. And, you know, in some ways you do have to look at the source where this is coming from. But in the NFL, Eric Reed, who has certainly been, you know, out front on a lot of different issues involving some of the social stances of the NFL and what have you, he is calling for an investigation and a revote of the recent NFL collective bargaining agreement. And he says that it's invalid because there's language that was added after ratification of the pact earlier this month. So in a letter to the NFLPA earlier today, Reed's lawyer said that language posted on the Players Association's website after passage of the agreement by, remember, it was a 1,019-959 vote on March 15th, contains language different from the one that the players signed off on. Okay? And he does screenshots on his Twitter and such of all of this. Okay? The letter from attorneys Ben Mesilas, M-E-I-S-E-L-A-S, and Ray Genko highlight a difference in wording in the section about the league's disability plan that affects hundreds, potentially thousands, of ex-players who applied for Social Security disability insurance payments before January 1st of 2015. In the version the players received and approved, those offsets applied only to players who applied after January 1st, 2015. Now, in a bunch of tweets that Reed sent out on Monday, he's providing screenshots of the CBA agreement and the changes and everything like this. Obviously, the NFL declined comment. The NFLPA told ESPN it's withholding comment till the attorneys have had a chance to review the pertinent information. Now, I'll say again, I don't know if there's any shenanigans or anything like that going on here, but it would completely surprise anybody that if there was some changes of language and verbiage in something like this? No. To me, no. Because, you know, frankly, I don't trust any of them. And I think everybody would try to squeeze a little something in here and there, maybe after the fact. You would think that would be pretty tough to do, though. But how about this? Is this even more reason why that those 500 guys that didn't vote stand out even more? Now, I don't know if this is going to lead to any kind of revote or if it's going to make the agreement invalid and there's going to be more discussion, whatever. But it just heightens the idea even more about the 500 guys that didn't vote. I mean, you can tell me that the language and the verbiage and everything is different, or maybe there's something, you know, that's a little bit shady or whatever, added in after fact or whatever like that. But what is fact is the fact that 500 guys didn't vote for it. You know, if this was a much higher majority, I don't know that this would be a story as far as a much higher majority of guys who voted yes for it. Or if this didn't, if this wasn't ratified, I don't know. Maybe it would have changed the verbiage and then they would re-vote. I don't know. But here's what I know. This story gets magnified because of how close it was, and that's a symptom of the fact that guys didn't vote. And we talked about that a few weeks ago on the show about how ridiculous it was that that many guys didn't vote for this collective bargaining agreement. So where this goes, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what the end game is for all of this, if Eric Reed has, you know, legs to stand on or whatever, and he's got the lawyers involved and he's got the screenshots. I mean, I'm not saying it's not legitimate, but you never know in these situations. It would seem pretty cut and dry that either the language was written, you know, as this at one point and then written as this after the fact. You would think that that would be pretty obvious, but in the world of the NFL and everything else, nothing is ever as easy as what it seems. And I guess I only buy into it potentially because why would I trust what unions and things like that do? Why would I think that the NFL, who tried to hide the concussions and tried to undersell the concussion settlement and things like that, to where a judge said, wait a second, this is not nearly enough money for what's going on here. You know, you're coming up with like $100 million. You need to come up with $1 billion. And the NFL did everything it could to try to hide that fact from it. So would I be surprised at any of this? No. Doesn't mean that it's true or not. But I guess we'll find out, right? Time will tell. But it certainly, if nothing else, magnifies the fact that you should be embarrassed if you're a player in the league that didn't vote on this. That you should be one of those guys that somebody says, hey, man, look how close this was, and now there's this potential issue that goes along with it. This should have been taken a look at a lot more seriously and more guys, you know, vote on it. And maybe there would have been other guys that would have seen the changes in the verbiage. I don't know. But it wouldn't have taken a whole lot of votes to sway, you know, to the negative side or to the non-approval side of this collective bargaining agreement. So maybe Eric Reed's onto something. I will say you always have to consider the source, you know, with what he's got. But certainly it should be pretty easy as to whether or not you've got screenshots of the agreement or they're not legitimate to out there. We'll see what this goes. But certainly the NFL right now, when they're trying to figure out their draft and if they're going to have a season, this, the last thing they need is controversy when it comes to the collective bargaining agreement and creating a sideshow for all of that when there's nothing really else to really have to focus on. Once you get through the draft, not enough to really have to focus on, that sideshows like this could really take some precedent because you can forget OTAs and all that kind of stuff. Jarvis and I were talking about that in the break. You can forget a lot of that kind of stuff from happening, you know, in the early part of the summertime. Not going to happen. I don't think the NFL needs any sideshows to go along with this. And that's what's bugging Chuck Reed. 404-741-0929 is the phone line. That is the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line as well. By the way, the lawyers and Eric Reed are demanding that there is a revote, saying that that is the quote-unquote the only logical answer to this. When there's a potential manipulation of the language to an agreement, what's the alternative? We're waiting on an explanation at this point. Should be funny because, I mean, like I said, the NFL doesn't need this kind of sideshow. They want pub right now, but they don't need any kind of real negative pub for people to just feed on and social media to just, you know, grab a hold of it like a leech and suck all the blood out of a story that they possibly can. All right, when we get back, it's going to be time for the Falcon flyover at the top of the hour. Arthur Blank gives his thoughts about the upcoming 2020 season and what may or may not happen with all of that. We'll get to all of that next in our Falcon flyover at the top of the hour. It is the John Chuckery Show, coming to you live on a Monday, Sports Radio 920 The Game, and on the radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.